your attention, please. The following program is exceedingly important and has certain elements which you may find totally repulsive. So we thought you... That's a disclaimer. You know, that's the way life is. Certain elements are very important, and on the other hand, certain other elements are extremely, well, I don't want to use the word repulsive. Let's put it this way. Yeah, repulsive. Well, you know, we got this mystery theater here now, and you think you've heard of mysteries. I'd like to, you know, I'll tell you, I'd like to point out that the mysteries in life are far greater and more sinister and curious, more curious than the mysteries in that are created in mysteries, real mysteries. Like one time, Shepherd's theory of the continuing, irritating, constant mysteries is the disappearance of things. Now, for example, the other day, I know, this place where I was at, this apartment, I know, had a plumber's helper. You know, there's a plumber's helper. And you will understand, of course, when you need a plumber's helper, that's something you really need, right? I mean, it's not a thing you just casually sit around. You're watching the Super Bowl. Say, hey, I wonder whatever happened to the plumber's helper. I think I'll go look at the plumber's helper. No, you don't do that. The plumber's helper is something that when you need it, it is usually up to your knees, rising fast, and it looks like any minute the floor is going to give away. You know, people are going to be drowned downstairs and the whole bit. Well, mysterious. The plumber's helper has mysteriously disappeared. Nobody saw it. Nobody knew about it. Where did it go? The vast mystery it's the mystery that is... Now, let's take things that you bought at one time. Now, Matt, Jerry, both of you must have done this. You bought stuff all of your life. You've been buying things. When did you first start buying things? You know, that's a historic moment in a person's life when he first becomes a consumer. After all, we live in a consumer society, right? Where would Nader be without consumers? And I might add, where would Nader be without chicanery? You realize what would happen if every manufacturer would straighten up and do the right thing? Nader would be working back there in the tie department again. Now, the question, it's the way it is. You know, the greatest fear that many reverend has is that one day sin will disappear from the world. And this would put him out of work instantly. You know, really it would. So don't necessarily always believe that the thundering, avenging shouter from the pulpit is actually against the thing that he's shouting against. Don't, not necessarily. Now, in fact, I'd like to ask you about your own life now. Do you recall the first moment that you became a consumer? No, you do not. And why do you not? Because it is almost a lifelong process. You became a consumer probably about the age of 3. Now, it's at about that age that the infant child, this mind composed of unsolidified scrambled eggs. You know, we're all born with scrambled eggs between the ears. This is very interesting theory that came out recently from John Hopkins. It's a scrambled egg theory of the brain, which is to say that when you are born, you know, it's just like everything else. It's like when you were born, you certainly you had a hand, about the size of a ping pong ball, right? Very few people the day they're born can play, say, middle linebacker for the Dolphins, although that would be an interesting thought, but it just simply isn't done. So your brain is the same way. You have this little brain, and it's soft. It's kind of gooey. It looks a little bit like a scrambled eggs. Well, now, as you grow older, your brain, theoretically, enlarges. And as it enlarges, it begins to slowly solidify. And by the time you're 16 or 17, very faint, almost prototypal ideas begin to drift through the brain, but not before that. A plate of scrambled eggs isn't good at coming up with abstract thoughts. So your brain slowly begins. Now, the problem here is there's a new disease that they've discovered, and that is that certain brains do not solidify it, and in fact, the person remains the carrier of a large pot of scrambled eggs between his ears throughout his entire lifetime. And he wonders, you know, what all the rest are talking about. Now, that does not stop him from giving out an opinion about that. This is, by the way, the very essence of slobism. A true slob never concedes that he doesn't know anything about anything. You notice that, Matt, in your life? A true slob, when confronted with anything that is totally an abstract, like say somebody brings up, let's just say for argument's sake, Jean-Paul Sartre and existentialism. Well, how do you think Archie Bunker would react to that? Do you think he would say, hey, you know, I never read none of that. That might be interesting. No way. He said, what is this? What does that French guy know about nothing? Oh, for God's sakes, I knew a couple of frogs when I was a kid. And I'll tell you this, when I was in the army over in France, I never met a frog that knew nothing about anything. Why, they walk around with it, they carry their bread around, they don't even put no wrappers on a bread. Well, that would end that right there. So a true slob never concedes that he does not know something. And in fact, he takes the position that people who bring out ideas that he does not comprehend, and here's the way he reacts to it. Ah, come on, what them long-haired kooks again? That kind of stuff was. Yeah, you don't got to do it all them nuts. These guys walking around, these long-haired nuts. Well, that's his general reaction to anything that has words of more than two or three syllables, and that you know, that occasionally have repercussions. So I would say this, basically, the idea of the scrambled eggs is fairly logical today, and I think that that ultimately they're going to prove that slobism is a physical problem. It's not a problem. It's a physical problem. Your brain has not solidified. So when you're talking to a guy who has a head the size of a watermelon and it's filled with scrambled eggs, you're not going to get through to him on any abstract theories. No way. And incidentally, he tends to blame all authority for all problems. This is another essence of the true dynamic 1974 type slob. So if he's walking down a street, you notice me slipping into my slob voice, he's walking down a street, see, and the next thing you know, it is snowing, and there's 12 inches of snow on 6th Avenue, and all the traffic is backed up, and the subways are late. What does he say? Oh, what do you expect with this idiot in there? You elected an idiot mayor, right? Okay. Or conversely, all problems relate ultimately to whoever is in charge. Now, if he's ever in charge, heaven protect us, I don't know where exactly it would go. But now, take for example the energy shortage. Now, vast numbers of slobs will say to this, well, what are you going to do? What do you expect with that guy in the White House? He firmly believes that somehow there's a cabal that the president presses a button and says, shortage. Give him shortage now for a while. That'll hold him. Now, he does not know how to explain the fact that they're having a shortage in Britain. If you say to him, say, you know, does the president also make a shortage in France? Does he make the same shortage happen in Japan? You know what his answer to that is? I'll tell you, he's going to answer that one, too. He says, oh, well, what do you expect of them Japs? Well, all right. Either that or you say, yeah, of course. They're all in it together. All the politicians. Well, he figures there must be a sneaking cabal where the premier of Japan is on the phone to the premier of Bulgaria, and then he gets the premier of Yugoslavia on the phone. They all say, all right, well, let's get him tomorrow at noon. We're going to have a shortage. And, you know, it all came down from the White House, the president. So this is all an essence of, the essence of slobism. It's kind of nice. And not that I have anything against it. It's just, you know, it's a fact of life. Now, the mysterious is constantly causing us to feel this way. Now, I might point out that for one brief instant, when I was in this apartment and the plumber's helper disappeared, there was a swirl of anger went through my head. You know that anger? What the hell happened to the plumber's helper? Well, immediately, my first impulse was, somebody is hiding it. See, this is the true paranoia working. Now, who the hell would take all that effort to hide the plumber's helper? I don't know. But paranoia does not know any reason. It's just a fact. So I said, who's hiding the plumber's helper? Now, I know it was right there, sitting there, right next to the television set. Now, where is the plumber's helper? No answer. Well, now, being basically a man of tremendous insight and deep compassion for my fellow men, and all of you know this is true, a man of great knowledge and wisdom. I took a hold of my psyche after a brief period of total uncontrollable anger over the disappearance of the plumber's helper, and my usual objective philosophical self came to the fore. I says, well, after all, you can't always expect to find a plumber's helper when you need it. So would you please pass over that 2-gallon wine jar and I will begin bailing. Well, at that point... Now, when you think back of all the things that you bought, that you really thought you needed at the time, where have they gone? Now, how many tennis rackets have you owned in your life, Matt? Yes, you're Matt, remember? One. Do you still have it? You do. That's an incredible thing. How many baseball bats have you owned in your life? 3 or 4. Do you still have them? Where did they go? Did you sell them? Do you remember actively throwing out a baseball bat? Now, that's the mystery I'm talking about. Where did they go? A baseball bat does not disintegrate into thin air, you know, like a Nabisco cracker. It's hard. It's finite. It stays there. And the great mystery of things is, where do these things go once you have gotten, not necessarily even through it? You would kind of like to have a baseball bat some Saturday afternoon, wouldn't you? It isn't that you said, the hell with baseball bats, and threw them out the window. No way. They disappeared into the great gulf, the great abyss of things. Gone. Now, have you ever had a typewriter, Matt? You still have it, I trust. So you have no mystery surrounding typewriters. Have you ever had a tape recorder? You had several. And you know exactly where all of them went. You do? You're telling me the truth now. Yes, you do know where they all went. Now, did you ever buy a radio or have a radio in your house, say, years, and you know where it went? It was actively thrown out. Somebody says, get that damn radio out! And no way. Where did it go? Nobody knows. And yet, right this very minute, shopping bag ladies carrying net shopping bags are pouring out of Macy's and Gimbel's, Bloomingdale's and Magnificent Alexander's, carrying other stuff home, which will disappear within a short time in that great, vast Sargasso Sea of forgotten objects, things of which our lives are made, you know, the junkyard of life. This reminds me, this is WOR, New York. I'm just contemplating and thinking about it. Those things. Do they sink into the sand? No. Don't put that down. Now, wait a minute. Now, just a minute now. Don't laugh about that. Have you ever read much about archaeology? Okay, what is archaeology? That's just guys digging up junk from past civilizations. If it's old enough, it's called archaeology. But it's junk, you know. They'll dig up a ladle. And they'll say this is the Upper Janeiro River Indians' specific type of ladle. Now, at one point, some Indians squatting on a rock, sitting there with this ladle in his mitt, laid it down, walked away from it, and it shortly thereafter became an archaeological find. Now, did it sink into the sand? Good question. Well, I'm going to tell you what I had happen to me one day. I was up in Maine, right? And I was digging for worms. Digging for worms. I'm digging away, see? And it's a sandy, sort of a loam, rocky soil. And I'm digging away there, seeing it was kind of wet. It was spring. I'm digging away. What do you think I came across about a foot and a half deep? I'm digging away, and I throw this shovel full of stuff up. It flew out. There, right there in my shovel, was a Duncan yo-yo. Now, there it was. I mean, it was a competition, international competition type Duncan yo-yo. You know the Duncan yo-yos? The kind when they had international yo-yo champs and they would all stand in the window at Woolworths wearing a t-shirt that said Filipino yo-yo champ. And he's swinging around with the red and black Duncan yo-yos. You remember those? Well, all right. I dug up a genuine Duncan yo-yo out of the ground. Now, it had sunk about 2 feet deep. Now, I know that nobody came out there at night and buried a yo-yo. I doubt it. You know, it's very much. So what happened? Well, it just sank down to the ground, and eventually it was lost to sight, and finally it was dug up by a worm digger. Now, that yo-yo could have very well have stayed there for 1,000 years. And some guy's now finally digging around there looking for artifacts, not worms. And he comes across a Duncan yo-yo. Now, the question is, would he have known what it was? You know what a yo-yo is. I say to you, yo-yo. You say, oh, yeah, yo-yo, yeah. Of course, you realize, of course, that term was also used by certain school kids when they saw, and I'm talking about 1950s school kids, when they saw on late movie, they saw Japanese war movies. You know, when John Wayne was always shooting down Zeros, he's flying around this F-4U. You've seen those movies? You know, the Marines were always fighting. They call them yo-yo stick movies. You know that? Yeah, that's a generic term, yo-yo stick, because it always sounded like the Japanese were always saying, oh, yo-yo stick! They would always say that into their radio. So, well, sure, you know what Ooga Booga movies are, don't you? Yeah, you know, that movie was often, you'd see in that movie, often Alan Ladd was in a lot of Ooga Booga movies, and you saw this great crowd of natives in the background there, see, and they're uprising, and he's wearing this khaki jacket, scene. He's usually with somebody like Ava Gardner, somebody really fantastic looking. They're just a typical type of chick you find in the jungles, you know. And he's standing there, and you hear in the back, "Ooga booga, ooga booga, ooga booga." Well, they're always hollering, "Ooga booga." Well, that's an Ooga Booga movie. Now they're all kinds. You know what an S&T is, don't you? Well, I'll tell you. The first word is sand. The second word refers to a portion of a lady's anatomy. That's the kind of movie that Yvonne DiCarlo was in endlessly with Tyrone Power. S&T. Well, while we're on the subject of that, hit them while they're still quivering, Matt. Hit them.
Your AMC dealer's got the all-new midsize car that economizes on everything but comfort. That car, the roomy 74 Matador. And another important advantage, our 74 Matador comes with an economical six-cylinder engine as standard equipment. And consider this, Matador is the only new midsize car backed by all the benefits of the exclusive AMC Buyer Protection Plan. Which means that under normal usage and accepting tires, if anything AMC did goes wrong with your new 74 Matador in the first 12 months or 12,000 miles, we'll fix or replace it free. Come in today. Meet the unbeatable combination. 74 Matador backed by the AMC Buyer Protection Plan.
Yeah, how do you like those prison type? Oh, yeah, it's all right. Don't worry about it. We have a little thing here. It says, see your AMC dealer where you get a good deal and a good deal more. He doesn't specify what more you get, but I don't know. Well, we have a note here for you skiing cuckoos, and it's kind of gas-saving news, too, which is an unbelievable idea. From the Connecticut Department of Commerce, they have great skiing right now in nearby Connecticut, and they have beautiful snow-covered slopes and trails for every member of the family, and they're near, too, by the way, just about an hour or two from Midtown Manhattan. Now, that means a round trip, in most cases, on one tank of gas, so you try that up to Vermont sometime. And if you'd like to find out about this, you can get a beautifully illustrated brochure from the Connecticut Vacation Center here in Manhattan. It's at 1268 Avenue of the Americas. It's right next door to Radio City. Or you can give them a call at 757-4455. That's 757-4455. So they apparently have some great skiing up in Connecticut. Find out about it. And ski up there this weekend and all winter long. Connecticut. Say, friends, does this thing have an ET? I'm a little afraid to hear it. I haven't heard it. Is that it? Yes, well, it says 7 seconds. I give it 7 seconds. Friends, if you have dry skin, you know, if you're growing scales and all kinds of stuff, winter with its cold weather and dry indoor heat can make you even scalier. and you wind up itching and scratching and making everybody mad. So for you, an ordinary oil or bead bath just isn't good enough, of course. You need a whole tub full of treatment. You just swim around in this stuff. Sardo Concentrate Bath Treatment. Sardo's effective therapeutic oils do more than bathe away flakiness. They seal in moisture to soothe and shield your skin and to keep your skin looking beautiful and young the way it looks right now. Sardo Bath Oil Concentrate. Just a little Sardo makes a whole tub full of treatment. And if you prefer taking showers, Sardo has a treatment for you, Sardoettes. They're soothing towelettes filled with Sardo's concentrate special therapeutic oils, and they really smooth itchy dry skin because Sardoettes are just like a Sardo tub full of treatment without the tub. No music. It says music up and out. What is this? What is this? How can you do any production here? That wasn't, it says 14 minutes this commercial lasts. That was very nice. Sardo. That sounds like one of those mystery dramas they used to have. Would you please give me a little echo chamber? Yes. It's time. Hello, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hello, hello, hello. That's it. Can't you just see this mystery theater? It's time for Sardo the Magician. Thank you, very good. Sardo the Magician. That was real good. George. Speaking of mysteries, I'd like to... This is the kind of news that you just don't hear Walter Cronkite giving out, you know? San Francisco, a beautiful stranger. Oh, hey, this is good. A beautiful stranger. Picture the scene. A beautiful stranger stood near dental student Howard Glassman's bed early Thursday. Now listen carefully to the scene. A beautiful stranger stood near Howard Glassman's bed. He's a dental student, early Thursday, and whispered, "Shh, I have just been with your roommate. I have been with your roommate. Where is the key? For the front door." Glassman, who attends the University of Pacific, smiled and gestured toward the front door. The young woman tiptoed to his bed, gave him a friendly, if not amorous, kiss, and left. Glassman went back to sleep. Later, he checked with his roommate, Fred Lamb. You know, I could see him check. "Hey, boy, that was some chick last night you had here, Fred. Oh, my God." He checked with Fred Lamb, 23, and found that Lamb knew nothing about the beautiful Chinese girl wearing black leotards. And not much else. Lamb's checkbook and his $15 in cash were missing. Now, I'd like to ask you a question here, just a theoretical question. I don't want to bring any personalities into this, but have you ever had vague suspicions that one night you're going to wake up and there's going to be somebody standing next to your bed? Have you ever had that in moments of, let's put it this way, partial nightmare? You've never been afraid of anything coming in and attacking you while you're asleep. You know, this is one of the great fears, basic fears of all animals, and we are an animal. That the human creature, as well as all other animals of our particular genre of animals, all share one basic primal fear, and that is, we are extremely vulnerable when we are asleep. And if you've ever walked up to a dog, maybe your old buddy, Ralph, some old dog ears, you know, and he's sound asleep. Have you ever come up behind him and say, "Hey, Ralph," and hit him on the behind? Ah! The next thing you know, no arm, right? You ever had that happen to you? Okay, why? Well, that's because when Ralph is asleep, he stops being your old friend Ralph, you know, the one that waters the hedges. He stops being your old friend, and he becomes a sleeping animal in the dark jungle of the night. And when something comes up and bops him on the behind like that, he's going to jump and grab. Well, all right. I saw a fantastic scene one time. Now, I'm going to tell you, if you think I'm joking, I'm going to tell you one of the great scenes I've ever seen in my life, which leads me to believe we are far more creatures of really dynamite, dynamic instinct than we ever suspect. And it happened in the Army. Now, I'll tell you why Army stories are often very valid relating to real, you know, real walking around life, is because things are stripped bare in the Army. I'll tell you, there's no kidding in the Army. Stripped very bare. Now, a lot of our things in life can be muted, very muted. Now, I'll give you an example of that. I was sleeping in this barracks. Now, the barracks had an entire platoon of guys, and you were in the Army, Matt, all right? And you slept in a barracks. Yes, indeed. All right, now, you know, they have all these cots, and they all face down towards the center aisle in the barracks, and they're very dark at night. The barracks, they blow taps, usually around 11:15, something like that, 10:15, depends on how mean your company commander is or your post commander is. They blow taps, lights out, bam. 5 minutes later, the lights are all pulled by a master switch somewhere, and the lights go out in the barracks, correct? Now, at that point, you have a couple of options open. One option is you can sneak down to the day room and shoot craps all night on the pool table. That can be a thing that's costly in several ways. it can be. I've seen traveling crap games in the Army that you wouldn't believe. I mean, unbelievable. I saw a group of staff sergeants in this post that I was in once. They appeared in different companies all around the base, you know. They'd be unknown staff sergeant would suddenly be down there at the day room having this fantastic crap game. They must have knocked over $500 million in about 2 weeks, just like that. They just skimmed the cream right off the camp. 2 days after pay, everybody was broke. So you can go in for this. On the other hand, you can go down and stand around under the streetlight, which is not very good in an Army post. Nothing happens. I mean, there's no interesting action goes down past the streetlight. Now, since this company that I was involved in at that time, Company K, was involved in extremely strenuous stuff, and that's the part of what I call the muting of life in civilian life, that rarely do they come up to the 23rd floor here at the station, and all of a sudden somebody stands out by the sales department and blows a whistle, you know, says, "All right, all you guys, uniform of today will be gray flannel suits, button-down white shirts, a black foulard tie, and fedora hats. We will begin in 7 minutes in front of the chock full of nuts, and we will march the street. We will walk all the way to 57th Street and back, and then we will walk down to the village and back, and we will make that entire trip by 06:15. Now let's go on a double move." No, it doesn't work like that. It does in Army life, and so you find out that's muting, see. It's muting of life. People are nice guys in civilian life. They may do terrible things like fire you, you know, because you're wearing the wrong smile, but they do it nicely. In the Army, no, they just rip your stripes off 7 days in the grease trap, and you know you've been fired big. Good. So anyway, at Company K, we'd been on three successive days of 20-mile forced marches. Now, what does that do to you? Well, for one thing, it gets you in really fantastic shape. Either kills you or you are like a jungle creature. Now, the guys that were killed were already gone. They had carted them away to the clinic about 3 days before, and there were guys that did. I mean, they just simply, you know, exploded on the march. That's it. They were gone, and they threw them into an ambulance and took them away. Well, now here we are at the end of the third day. We have walked 60 days, in effect, in 3 days, but it's not just 60 days. We are carrying a 70-pound field pack on our back. That does not include a steel helmet. It does not include about an 8 or a 9-pound semi-gas-operated automatic, semi-automatic weapon, 303 caliber. You remember that thing. So you carry all this stuff on you, and you have traveled 20 miles, and I might say, through insanely rotten weather. It was raining through the entire 3 days, and cold, driving rain. So Company K was a company of silent specters, who at the end of the third day, when we came back after our 20-mile hike, our 20-mile forced march, we came down the company street, and in front of the in front of the day room. We all assembled there, and the first sergeant stood for a couple of minutes and looked into the rain. We were wearing our ponchos. And he says, "All right, that concludes 3 days of forced march. Tomorrow we're going on bivouac. We're going to be on bivouac for 4 days. Any of you guys got to change equipment for any bivouac purposes? Like, you don't have a canteen, you're going to have a canteen on bivouac. And if you don't have a canteen, you don't drink no water, because you're going to only drink water out of your canteen. Any questions, come down to the day room. We'll ask any questions. I'll be down there for about 10 minutes. All right, attention, fall out." Well, we fall out, and we're so tired that we went drifting back into the barracks. We piled into the barracks. The rain is pouring down. Now, some guys, immediately upon getting into the barracks, would fall asleep. Just immediately, fall back on their bed later. They don't eat. They don't do anything. They sleep. Other guys instantly go to their perpetual letter writing, where they immediately take off their poncho and squat down on their footlocker and start writing the interminable letter, which, incidentally, was always a losing letter. I've discovered that the more letters a guy writes to this girl, the less chance he has of winning. Do you agree with that? You know what I'm talking about. Some guy's got loser written all over him. I mean, in capital letters. Often it's hemstitched into their drawers, into their pants. Loser. You can tell a loser even in the shower. He's got loser written all over his ribs. So, nevertheless, we're back from this 20-mile hike. There's been two of them prior to that. I go down to the mess hall. I was so tired. It was one of the rare times. So tired. All of us were so completely worn out that we didn't even really eat. I remember just sitting there looking at these giant pork chops. The Army, I don't know what kind of pigs the Army gets its pork chops from, but the pork chops, you know, were about 2 inches thick, and they're made of total gristle and fat. And fantastic. I don't know what kind of pig that is. I wonder if he even had any bones. It was an enormous fat, chunk of fat, say, with this kind of white liquid poured over it. And Harvard beets, the thing they call Harvard. Do they ever have Harvard beets at Harvard? My God. The Army has a thing on Harvard beets, right? You know this, man, right? Harvard beets and Jell-O. So we're sitting there with the Harvard beets and the Jell-O and the fat pork chops, and I just looked at it. I said, "Oh, geez, I'm so tired." And I have my choice. They have a thing in the Army they call beverages. Now, a beverage either consists of this fantastically strong coffee, or sort of purple Kool-Aid, which in our company was called a purple death. And so you had your choice between a purple Kool-Aid and the coffee, the beverage. So I sat there, oh, hell with that. You know, so I drifted on down to the PX with me and Gasser and a couple of guys, and we are going to trade our beverage privileges tonight for a couple of cans of maybe Budweiser. So we go into the PX, we drink the Budweiser, and that makes you even sleepier, you know. So by about 7:15, I was really dead, see. So I come drifting back to the barracks now. Very early for me. It's about 8 o'clock, and I sit on the bunk. It's still... the lights are still on in there, and everybody's very soundless. Nobody's saying anything. There's a certain point where weariness gets you so down that you don't even gripe anymore. Nothing. You know, you just sit there. So, you know, you get worn down. It's a fact. So we're just sitting around. I'm just sitting there, and I picked up my barracks bag, my old barracks bag. My B bag was there. And I opened up, and I'm rummaging around in the B bag because I remembered that I had drifted down to the bottom of the B bag some of these cookies. And I'm looking for a cookie, and I can't, anything, you know, just sort of wasting time. And I tied up my bee bag again. I look across, and there's Gasser sitting over there, and he's just sort of staring off into space, wearing his underwear. And a couple of guys are asleep. Well, the next thing I know, I am drifting off. And so I said, the hell with it. And I stuck my bee bag up on the hook back of the bunk, and I crawled in. See, I'm laying in there. Well, right next to me was Corporal Elkins. Now, Corporal Elkins, he was not really a corporal. He was acting Corporal Elkins, actually. That's a different kind of a corporal. So he was in the next bunk. And so Elkins was already asleep, and I mean asleep. Elkins was one of those guys that sleeps aggressively. There's certain people who sleep is a passive thing, you know. It just happens to them. But there are other guys who grab sleep with gusto. I mean, they really sleep. Well, Elkins was a fantastic sleeper. The only guy I've ever met who, when they would give us a 5-minute, you know, take five, Elkins would instantly sleep. He'd just sit there, stand, whatever, he'd sleep. He could march to sleep. Well, he was a really great sleeper. So Elkins is sleeping away. Not a snorer, because a real sleeper does not snore. Understand, that's wasting sleep. That's wasting energy. A true sleeper lies motionless with a very vague look of rapt enjoyment on his face. He's enjoying a sleep. He's enjoying the act of being unconscious. So Elkins is laying there. His face is staring up at the ceiling. Little did I realize that I was about to see a dramatic thing happen. Now, oh, I shouldn't tell you this because, you see, I think most people don't really recognize the animal that's lurking inside of all of us. And they don't want to recognize this. They think they're not. You know, they're basically civilized. But underneath each one of us lurks an uncaged, thoroughly dangerous jungle beast, given the proper situation. Now, when you're asleep, I'm going to ask you a theoretical question here. When a general is asleep, is he a general? No way. Nope, I suggest no. When an Iranian is asleep, is he an Iranian? When a gorilla is asleep, is he a gorilla? That's just, you know, these are the questions that you got to answer if you're going to understand anything about life. You cannot just say, what's this nut talking about? You know, you can't do that. Although I know that several of you are doing it right now and are hurriedly going through the TV guide to find out whether or not Johnny Carson is continuing his long nonstop interview with Zsa Zsa Gabor and Victor Borge. So I would suggest to you that there are other things in life, among them the great mystery of life itself. Now, when you're asleep, when anything is asleep, is it the 20th century? Or are all these things that we call civilization, time, are they things which are product of an active, conscious imagination? Is a man asleep? Now, here, I'll put it on another basis. If you go to sleep tonight and you are sleeping, and let's say you're really deeply asleep now. Now it's 2 a.m. You're sound asleep, and you're really starting to hit it, you know. Are you any different at that point? Are you sleeping any differently than, say, a man of 5,000 B.C.? Now, what do you think? Are you the same or different? In other words, in your unconscious slow descent into that vast abyss of the animalness of you, you slough away all externals. A guy who's asleep, is he married? Well, as a matter of fact, you know that on record there is a great divorce case that was really just a fantastically messy case that was just recently cleared up. I mean, it was recently ended, that this woman got so mad whenever her husband would go to sleep, she'd continually wake him up because he seemed to be going away from her all the time. He would go to sleep and he would get this different look on his face. So she kept waking him up. The only time he could sleep was when she was asleep. And apparently she had insomnia. So the point is that she kept waking him up until finally one day he just, you know, blew his stack, and that was the end of that, and it hit the fan, and she just could not stand seeing him sleep. And the question that arises, are you anything when you're asleep? Do you have an education when you're asleep? Well, these are, you know, questions. So I'm sitting in the barracks there, and I fall asleep now. Now, for any of you who know anything about the Army, you know some very basic facts about the Army, and that is, one, everybody gets up at the same time. You do not lie in your cell, unless you have a special detail or duty. I have never seen it happen in the Army unless some wild thing immediately thereafter happened as a result of it, where you're lying in your sack, right? And they go, they blow, reveille, right? They blow reveille, which is usually taped. In fact, it's always taped. I never saw a guy actually blow it. So this tape goes off, right? At 5:15 or whatever the time is, you don't ever say to yourself, hey, listen, will you tell them down at the orderly room that I'm sleeping in today? Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of tired. Tell them I'll forget it. I'm going to skip breakfast. I'll probably get up about time for lunch, right? Tell them down there. No way. So everybody wakes up at the same time. Now, we are lying in the sack, and Company K is completely knocked out asleep. Now, sleep, when you're really tired, seems to go by almost instantaneously. A true sleep is almost when you're really sleeping, although psychologists will say there's no such thing as a dreamless sleep, that when you're really asleep, it just seems like a few ticks of the second go by, and it's already the next day. Well, I am lying in the bunk, and suddenly I'm aware of something. It is pitch black in the barracks. I can smell the butt cans, and there's a giant sound that has awakened me. I hear this, I hear this yelling, and I look up, and in the darkness I see a flashlight go arching back over and land on the floor and roll down the aisle. And for a second, I didn't know where the hell I was. I could put nothing together. And then I saw what had happened. That Elkins had drawn KP for today. Now, what they do in KP is that every morning, just before reveille, actually about an hour and a half before reveille, this guy walks down, it's a corporal, walks down the aisle. And he wakes guys up, and he shines a light in their faces. All right, come on, let's go. KP, let's go, man. Well, he had shined his light in Elkin's face. And Elkin, of course, being a sleeping animal, he could have been an orangutan. He could have been a gorilla. Elkins woke up, and immediately, when he sees this light, he figures they've come to get him at long last. It is death approaching. It is the total evil approaching. And he just goes, oh, oh! And he hit the guy in the mouth, knocked him flat. The guy was knocked flat. You know what? Over a tea kettle, his flashlight flew. And, well, what did he do? Well, being a corporal, there's only one thing to do. He jumped up and hit Elkins in the mouth. Well, for about 30 seconds, these guys were fist fighting it out. And then Elkins woke up and said, oh, what's the matter? What? The guy says, KP, and his teeth are hanging out. And I have always, from that time on, by the way, Elkins is curious. He was no longer acting corporal. Elkins was sent to a place down at the other end of the post where they kept him for 1 month, 30 days, as a matter of fact. And he did a lot of extra work and various other things. Later, by the way, wrote a hit play about it called the... Well, I don't want to bring that into it, but yes, he did. He wrote a hit play called The Slam. You know, it was a dynamic, hard-hitting expose of Army prison life. But, you're no different than anything else when you're asleep. You might as well be a shark. You spent 27,000 years trying to learn a few facts of life. It's called education. You went to Columbia. At 3 o'clock in the morning, you're just as bad as a turtle. You just lay there. And you're dangerous. Dangerous. Never, never mess with sleeping dogs, friends. Or sleeping corporals. Sleeping anything. Be careful. I said careful. This is WOR in New York, and you stay tuned for John Wingate, you hear?